After years of debate and activism, marriage equality comes to the Sunshine State. Good Tuesday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. Hope your day's off to a great start. Just ahead, keep listening because we're going to take your calls as same-sex marriage becomes Florida law today. An historic day in the state. Get on the line now with your thoughts and comments at 549-2937. Then later, why minority contractors are crying foul in their bids for government work. Plus, don't miss it as we've got a preview of tonight's big show on WJCT television, Ripley, Believe It or Not. All of that ahead. But first this morning, same-sex marriage is now the law of the land in Florida. Beginning this morning, couples will start applying for marriage licenses just as backlash grows over a controversial decision to end all weddings at the Duval County Courthouse and a couple of other courthouses in our area. And there's more. A mass wedding event is going to be held Saturday morning in Hemming Park, and dozens of couples are expected. Now, marriage equality has been a cause that activists have been trying to achieve in this state and around the country for many years. It is an historic day in Florida. Here with more now, we welcome a leading local voice on the issue, Jacksonville attorney Carrington Mead, here in studio. She goes by Rusty. Rusty, it's a pleasure to have you on the show. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for inviting me.
And here's our question to callers right now. We want to know your thoughts. As same-sex marriage becomes legal today in Florida, what are you thinking about this? What are your reactions? Get on the line right now at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet the show. And we also welcome your comments on our Facebook page. A big day, one that you and other advocates on this cause have fought for many years. Rusty Mead, what are your thoughts this morning as your clients actually are waiting for you right now at the Duval County Courthouse as they get their marriage licenses and are looking forward to getting married?
Well, I'm absolutely overjoyed for them. I do appreciate exactly what rights and responsibilities and obligations they're going to be entitled to as having, been married. I'm married myself, and I'm also a divorce attorney, so I understand exactly what they're getting into. So I'm really happy for them.
This has been a long road when you look at the issue of marriage equality in Florida, it's had many twists and turns. Let's go back to 2008 when it was only 6 years ago when the state's ban on allowing gay couples to adopt children was lifted. In those 6 years, there's been an absolute sea change in what's going on in the legal sphere and also in terms of public opinion on this issue. What do you think has been driving that?
Well, I think that the key players in this movement have been the people who are against us. I think that the more they come out with inarticulate and debased arguments, the more they expose the ridiculousness of prohibiting equal rights to everybody.
How do you mean?
Well, when they say things like, it's going to ruin your straight marriage because I got married to my wife. We got married in August of 2012 in D.C., and I don't know that any of my straight friends reported any type of earthquakes occurring at the time.
So you think that the arguments that those opposed to marriage equality have raised over the years ended up backfiring?
Yeah, I can't ruin your marriage. If I'm ruining your marriage, then, there's something wrong already.
Now, there's going to be a mass wedding event Saturday in Hemming Park. You've been leading the effort on that. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I'm hosting an event in Hemming Park. It begins at 9 o'clock, ends at 3:30. We're going to start by registering our couples at 9 o'clock. And we're hoping to start ceremonies at 10 o'clock. And then after that, after having a little marriage fun, we're going to go ahead and dance and celebrate and have some entertainment.
It's sure to be a joyful occasion. And at the same time, there was a controversial decision. The Duval County Clerk of Courts, Ronnie Fussell, a couple of other clerks of court around Northeast Florida, when the U.S. District Judge Robert Hinkle ruled that marriage equality would become the law in Florida, several courthouses in our little corner of the state decided to end all courthouse weddings because they said their staff didn't feel comfortable marrying same-sex couples. There's been a backlash to that, and can you share with us, it appears now that there will be a lawsuit filed in this regard. What's happening with this?
Well, myself and other attorneys are working together to research this every angle on this issue, and we are preparing to bring forth a suit to sue Mr. Fussell and his like-minded clerks, because we believe this is an abridgment on access. I mean, this is disadvantages more than just, same-sex couples. People who are disabled this is going to prohibit their access, because a lot of people who are disabled and can't get around much go to the courthouse and use it as a one-stop shop because they can't get out much and they're transportationally challenged. And so this is going to significantly affect a lot of folks.
So you'll make the argument that it's discriminatory towards all couples, not just LGBT couples, to end this custom of courthouse weddings. But does the statute say that they are legally required to perform courthouse weddings, or is it just a custom?
Well, myself and other legal scholars, some of them who wear robes, believe that because the statute specifically addresses the service charge that's allowed by the clerk and that there's a certain procedure for discontinuing services that support the trial court provided by the clerk, that implicitly states that they have a duty and they need to provide proper notice.
And lots of calls already. We'll go to the phones in just a moment as we discuss same-sex marriage becoming the law of the land today in Florida, joining a growing number of states deciding in favor of marriage equality. What are your thoughts? We'll get to the phones at 549-2937 in just a moment. You know, Rusty, over the years, public opinion, as I mentioned, has moved decidedly in favor of marriage equality. Still, though, for those listening right now who really disapprove of this change and feel it's a mistake and disagree with it quite strongly, often in accordance with folks' religious beliefs, what would you say to those folks?
I'm just going to love them where they're at. I mean, everybody's entitled to their opinion. It's not going to affect my life. It's not going to make a difference to my, what happens to me today. I'm going to go home to the same household, the same people that love me.
Let's go to your calls right now. What are your thoughts about marriage equality in Florida? 549-2937 is the number to join the show as couples amass at the Duval County Courthouse right now and at other courthouses around the state applying for marriage licenses. Let us know what you're thinking. Ben at the Beaches. Hey, Ben. Thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just want to echo something that Rusty said about this affecting more than just homosexual couples. I'm married to a woman. That's my sexual orientation. But it does affect everyone in our community, I think. We live in a democracy where we can vote, and this is something that the majority now views as the right thing to do, to give people the right to be married, regardless of their sexual orientation. And I really am offended by this as a straight person, because I see it as a small sect of people that really feel passionately about their opinion, which is fine, but they're taking their feet in, and they're doing it in a very childish way to stop something from happening that was brought about in the correct order in our government. So I wanted to voice that opinion, that I feel like that's not the way to express your opinion, to dig your feet in and to make life difficult for people. It's just childish and it's unproductive, and it makes the rest of the state look bad.
That's Ben at the Beaches. Ben, thanks for giving us a call. Rusty.
Well, I kind of agree with Ben, but it's interesting to hear that come from somebody who's straight, and I do understand a lot of people share that same opinion.
Let's go now to Neyland in Jacksonville. Neyland, hi. And you're new to town, I guess?
I am indeed. Moved here a couple of months ago.
Okay. Well, welcome to town. Welcome to the First Coast.
Thank you, and I'm enjoying this thing, and I particularly like the previous caller. I just wanted to note that this morning when I heard the news of Duval canceling the marriages, I almost went into immediate outrage mode. But before I could even have the energy to get mad, I heard about the Hemming Park thing and also about a local attorney who's offered his office because his son is gay. And I just think that speaks highly of Jacksonville. I realized I moved to a more conservative portion of the state, but I think it just illustrates how good-hearted and kind the majority of people are here in the Jacksonville area, And I just encourage everyone to take a positive take on this whole thing. Consider marriage seriously before you go do it. It's not a trend. There are repercussions. But I just wanted to say I'm so proud to live here and proud to see such positive things, and I commend Rusty on this Hemings Park event.
Neyland, thanks for the call, and I hope you're enjoying your new adventure in Jacksonville. You know, increasingly, Rusty, in the last couple of years here in this city, straight allies, in fact, there's even a group in town called We Are Straight Allies, have joined forces with LGBT activists on this issue.
That's correct. Yeah, Shavar Orange done a great job of organizing our straight allies, and I think that our straight allies have been very significant in the role of the Hemings Park Plaza event. The one of the things that I have been impressed by, I haven't been impressed by the number of LGBT folks who are participating, but it appears that a strong majority of all of my volunteers are straight allies, and I did, you know, even a few years ago, we couldn't have counted on that type of support. And now they're just coming out of the woodwork, which I wholly appreciate. And I know the rest of my LGBT brothers and sisters appreciate.
And when we talk about this issue in the macro, for many years, activists have argued that marriage equality is important as opposed to, say, a civil union because of the many legal and social benefits that accrue to marriage. Can you explain why that's been such an important part of this argument?
The reason why it's an important part of the argument is that civil unions only had an effect only within the state boundaries where they were performed, and only as it concerned state benefits, and the state couldn't have any influence on the federal government at that point. So having same-sex marriage now and having it be – or having marriage of people of the same sex – I don't want to call it same-sex marriage because it's not a different kind of marriage. It's marriage, and that's what marriage equality is about. So having marriage of people of the same sex, it allows them to be able to take care of each other so that other people don't have to, like the taxpayers.
Let's go now to Lenny in Avondale. Lenny, thanks for holding. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. This I can't remember at what point there was a little buzz on Facebook. When the bill was introduced or something, and a bunch of people were like celebrating, and several of my friends were on there celebrating the decision, or somebody, I can't remember what the turning point was, but it was at some point. And it was interesting, the little discussion, a little running discussion on Facebook went immediately to how important it is so that people have protection in case of divorce or separation, so that they have legal rights. And I have same-sex friends who suffered after long relationships went south, and you know, assets and blah blah blah, and you know, I put on there, I said divorce protection, is this what this is all about? And nobody responded. I thought it was very interesting. You know, with the sorry state of marriage in general, I thought it was interesting that all this discussion of divorce protection popped up right away. Your thoughts on that?
All right, Lenny, thanks for the call. Rusty Mead, you are an attorney who has handled divorces for your clients as well as marriages.
That's correct. In fact, I divorced two lesbians a couple of days before the Broward County divorce was entered. People don't seem to understand that when you're married, whether you hold an asset individually, or if you purchase it individually or jointly, it's a marriage. You know, it's a marital asset. And much like my wife and I, and many of us do. You know, I guess people assume that we all have, like, you know, we're all successful people and we all have the same kind of jobs and have the same income. But much like, you know, straight couples, we have breadwinners and we have people who are not breadwinners in the family. And so, like, with, you know, my situation, my wife is not a big breadwinner. I pay most of the bills and stuff like that. And so, if something were to happen to me, it'd be really important that she be protected because, yeah, I understand. But divorce is, I mean, I think the straight people have proven that divorce is a possible outcome of marriage. I mean, it's a first, that's the
think,
first indicator
so.
Of divorce, yeah. I don't think that we're going to perfect marriage at all. I think that we're still going to have the same problems. People get married and for different reasons separate, you know, for good reasons and for bad reasons. And so I don't think that we're going to run the market on great marriages. But when you have significantly contributed to the family, like the people I'm going to be marrying today, one of them is a stay-at-home mom. The other one works for the family because it is cheaper for one of them to stay home than work a job that would only pay for the daycare. And so, you know, that person who stays home needs to be able to count on the fact that if something happens later on, that they still have a share in what they've worked together to build.
And as marriage equality becomes the law of the land today in Florida, lots of calls at 549-2937 as we connect with Jacksonville attorney and leading activist on this issue, Carrington Rusty Mead. And we'll go back to the phones in just a moment. But first, let's get a little bit of reaction coming in from Twitter and Facebook. On our First Coast Connect Facebook page, Jamie writes, "I'm embarrassed by the clerk of court's decision to discontinue marriage ceremonies at the courthouse. This reflects poorly on our city." Jenny writes, "The argument always seems to be based on morals, but heterosexuals are allowed to make a complete mockery of marriage in plenty of ways themselves. It's a clear double standard. Either we let all consenting adults marry or we apply strict standards of morality to everyone." And some tweets coming in. Here's a tweet from Kingsley. "Wouldn't this mean that clerk of court Fussell isn't fit for his job? I can't decide that a part of my job is icky and still expect to keep it." Strong reactions coming in.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it really shows that Mr. Fussell's bad at his job. I mean, it doesn't take, you know, a great amount of skill to know how to file your paperwork, but this is a poor decision on his part, I believe.
And he's refused any further comment on this. We do need to point out, however, his spokesman, Charlie Broward, said Monday that state law only requires clerks to issue the licenses, not to actually perform the ceremonies. You're going to allege otherwise in your lawsuit.
That's correct.
Let's go back to the phones. Meanwhile, lots of calls as marriage equality becomes the law of the land today in the Sunshine State. 549-2937. Lori on the West Side. Go ahead, Lori.
Hi there. I want to kind of open a question to the faith-based community. I read the Bible because it's such a popular book, and I read the book to the Hebrews many, many times, and it's in the New Testament. It's not a long book, but it talks about how when a law is not perfected, it the covenant between God and his people must change. And I'm wondering what they think of that book in light of this decision, because they think that God's wrath is going to come down on them, but we have known that in the past it has never worked. So, and that's part of what that book talks about. And that's how I would like them to kind of discuss it in light of what that book instructs of the people.
That's Lori on the West Side. Thanks for the call. Rusty Mead.
I'm not a member of the faith-based community, so I can't really respond to that. But I do believe that there's a separation of church and state.
And you'll be making your arguments based on that perspective when it comes to the issue of the weddings.
Well, I'm sure if the issue is raised, I'll have something to say back about that.
And we want your thoughts on same-sex marriage equality becoming legal in Florida. Let's go to Janice in St. Augustine. Go ahead, Janice. All right, Janice, give us a call back. The number to join the show, 549-2937. Stan on the north side. Hi, Stan. How are you today?
Hi. How are you doing?
Doing well, thanks.
I think I called about 2 months ago, and we were discussing this marriage, and I mentioned Meister versus Moore. Now, that's the basis of marriage in the United States. I'm sure the lawyer could tell you about the case. It actually says that you do not need a license in any state of the United States to get married. Okay? Could I have her comment on that?
Okay. Thanks for the call, Stan. I'm not familiar with that, but go ahead, Rusty.
Well, you know, The marriage license is a legal recognition of what we know as a social institution that is performed either by a religious institution or some other type of social group done in recognition of a commitment between two individuals. And so I've always said that there's two components to marriage. People can go to their local church and have some type of commitment ceremony or something like that. We've been doing that as gay people for several years in the local MCC churches. So, you know, beyond that, I mean, people go down to the courthouse for the marriage license so they can be entitled to certain obligations that they want the benefit of that are legally recognized by our government. And so that's where that separation is.
And can you explain a little bit about the reasoning behind U.S. District Judge Robert Hinkle's ruling that denying marriage to a certain group of people is unconstitutional?
Well, I think what he was using, at the very least, would be called a rational basis test. In order for a government to pass a rule against or a law against a group of individuals, you have to have a rational basis for doing so, at the very least. And so the state has a compelling reason. So what they'd have to be doing is protecting something on behalf of other citizens in order to deny a group a certain right. And in this case, you know, the state can't really identify any harm. There is certainly, I believe, harm in not allowing us to marry, because if you don't let us marry, then you have to take care of my wife who can't take care of herself.
Lots of calls. Meanwhile, the lines are jammed on this historic day in Florida as marriage equality becomes the law of the land in the state. We have calls from across the listening area. Let's get a few more of you on the air. Larry in Fruit Cove is with us. Hi, Larry. Good morning. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, I have a facility question. The Florida Times Union this morning, in a story about the clerk of courts, referred to a chapel in the clerk of courts building. So my question is there really a chapel there? And is it open to the public? Is there a reason why a couple couldn't go there and just bring their own officiant and perform a marriage?
Yeah. Great question, Larry. Thanks for that. What about that?
That is a good question. And what I understand has happened is that the clerk has moved all of the wedding type items out of there and has turned it into like a waiting ante room. Now he's saying because of the rush of marriage license, I guess he thinks this is going to be quite permanent. He'll be enthralled on a daily basis, that he needs the extra space to host people and let them sit down. That is a question, though, that, you know, we've addressed the fact that a lot of taxpaying dollars have been, you know, spent not just for the room, but for the equipment put into the room in order to facilitate weddings. And so that's a definitely a concerning issue. But I know that some of the judges have offered to open up their chambers today for marriages.
Yeah. And do you know, can you give us the names of the judges that will be doing that?
Well, I know that Judge Lance Day has offered his chambers for me to marry Ms. Fassard and Ms. Day, who do have their marriage license this morning and who are anxiously awaiting my arrival. I do know that there's some other judges who would like to stand in support with them while we perform the marriage.
Let's get a few more of your calls on the air. Thanks, everyone, for your patience waiting on hold to speak and connect here on the program. Matt in Avondale. Hey, Matt, thanks for holding. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, good morning, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have two very quick points. I'm really put out. I'm new to the area as well, from Philadelphia and Orlando most recently. And I'm really put out by this, the equivalent of a five-year-old's temper tantrum by the clerk to not perform weddings anymore. And my apologies to all five-year-olds out there. I would ask people who agree with this man's decision that I don't believe that anyone should be denied a job based on their faith, absolutely not. But if you can't do what you're asked to do, then you have to make a decision what's more important to you, your faith or your job. I would ask people who agree with this man to think about if they had brought their child in a medical emergency to a hospital where they were forced to hire a Christian Scientist who didn't believe in medical intervention, and they were to say, you know, my faith doesn't allow me to prescribe medical treatment. I just think they really need to think deeply about that. No one should be denied a job based on their faith, but if you can't do this or you don't want to do this, move on. And I think there should be some pressure by the community to encourage this man to move on and find a job perhaps that is more fitting to him. It really is a bit of an embarrassment to be in a place where this is okay, even for a short term. I would also ask, people who do agree with this step, what is the point of this? What are you really trying to say? This isn't an expression of your religion. This is the denial of a service to others. And I just think it's really a shame. I am buoyed, however, by hearing all of these people calling in on the program today in support. It's really time we moved past this. This is going to be an embarrassing chapter in our history here, and I hope it's just a short one. That's my comment.
All right, and that's Matt in Avondale. Thanks for the call, Matt. We welcome all opinions, all points of view. Let us know what you're thinking about marriage equality here in Florida. As we go to Autumn on the West Side. Hi, Autumn. Good morning.
Hi there. Good morning. I just wanted to ask, is the suit that is being brought, is that against all of the clerks of court who are refusing to perform these services, or is it just against the DuLaw clerk of court?
Autumn, thanks for the call. Correct me if I'm wrong, Rusty, but it's Duval, Baker, and Clay in our area, and then also Santa Rosa and Okaloosa counties in other parts of the state have ended all courthouse weddings, correct?
I think it's Santa Rosa and Escambia.
Escambia.
And I don't want to really throw them in the same pot with Clay and Duval.
Why
and
is that?
Baker. Because they had actually ceased performing weddings, I think, in Escambia up to a year ago. It was either Escambia or Santa Rosa. And in the other county, in the alternate county, they've been having struggles with having enough personnel to perform marriages for the last 6 months. So I don't want to immediately throw them into the same barrel with the Duval, Baker, and Clay folks. But we are investigating how that kind of appeared, whether or not it's just kind of coincidental, or was there some other type of meaningful effort behind there to cancel those.
Meanwhile, in our area, St. John's County, Nassau County, and Putnam County, I believe, they've kept their custom of courthouse weddings in place. That's correct?
That's correct. But to answer the caller's question, we're not singling just one person out, if you know what I mean.
Mark in Jacksonville has been holding. Mark in Jacksonville. Go ahead, Mark. Thanks for calling.
Good morning, everybody. My question to Rusty is, will this ruling eliminate the need for same-sex couples in the adoption world to go through all those hurdles to adopt, or will their marriages, will their adoptions be treated like an opposite-sex couple adopting?
Great question. Thanks. It was only in 2008 that Florida overturned its ban on gay couples adopting.
That's correct. So we've been having to do second-parent adoptions, which have involved us having to treat the other parent who's non-biological as a legal stranger. And so we've had to have them go through background checks and home studies and all these other demeaning items. So what's going to happen now, like with Ms. Vassard and Ms. Day, they need to finalize the relationship between Ms. Vassard and their young man, Colton. So now we can just do a step-parent adoption and enjoy all, and avoid all those unnecessary situations. And people who are legally married that have children born into their relationship should be treated just like the straight folks, and it shouldn't necessitate an adoption.
How do you see this marriage equality now becoming statewide legal affecting the ongoing discussion about whether Jacksonville might try again to update its human rights ordinance?
I'm sorry, can you say that again?
As marriage equality becomes the law of the land in Florida, in the upcoming mayor's race and when there are city council elections held later this year, do you see another bid coming forward to update the city's human rights ordinance to include the LGBT community and job and housing and public accommodations protections?
Yeah, I do. I think that this is going to probably bring more people out of the woodwork in a negative fashion and help support the reasons why we need this. I mean, I've already fielding phone calls where people have approached people at their HRO departments at work right now and have been told that they can't go into work today and ask to update their benefit forms and include their spouse they're already married to because they haven't figured out how to deal with that yet. So we're going to have some issues.
At their companies,
you mean? Their companies, and then some of them with the state. So,
Kathy in Ponte Vedra Beach. Hi, Kathy. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm a mother of four, 53 years old, been married for 27 years, and I'm a notary. And I'm looking very forward to performing marriage ceremonies for anyone who would like to get married. And I agree with the caller a few callers ago that stated that it was sort of an embarrassment, once again, for Jacksonville to be in the news for something like this, that someone has decided to have a temper tantrum and refuse to perform marriage ceremonies for people who would like to make a commitment. So that's my comment.
Kathy, thanks so much for the call and everyone who called in today. So you're off to the courthouse, Rusty Mead, and there's a mass wedding Saturday in Hemming Park.
there is a mass wedding in Hemi Park, and we invite anybody who is properly ordained within the state of Florida or holds a notary public in the proper, you know, properly in the state of Florida to come to the event at 7:30 for their instructions if they want to help us get a bunch of people hitched.
Thanks for being on the show today.
Thank you for inviting me. It's been a joyful event.
A big historic day in the state, and we were joined by local attorney Carrington Mead as marriage equality becomes the law of the land in Florida. Much more still ahead later, a preview of Ripley, Believe It or Not, airing tonight on WJCT television. But up next, why small businesses in Florida are crying foul when it comes to their bids for government contracts. We'll explain. You're listening to First Coast Connect.
On the next Fresh Air, writer and TV producer George Pelicanos. He worked on the HBO series The Wire and Tremé. He grew up in Washington, D.C. and had his own brushes with the law before he became a crime novelist. He has a new collection of short stories and a novella. Join us. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
Spend some time in The Square, an online venue for local artists. WJCT and the Cultural Council of Greater Jacksonville invite you to vote for your favorite submissions. Vote now through the end of the month. To learn more about The Square and to place your vote, visit wjct.org/thesquare.
On the road or at home, chill out with the Electro Lounge, only on 89.9, Tuesday to Saturday nights.
Welcome back. Well, the author of the number one New York Times bestseller, Proof of Heaven, is back with a follow-up looking at the experiences of ordinary people who say they've had profound spiritual and near-death experiences. They say shows the reality of heaven and our true identities as spiritual beings. I spoke about a month ago with author Dr. Eben Alexander about his book, The Map of Heaven. Eben Alexander, welcome to the program.
Well, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Certainly. You know, in your first book, Proof of Heaven, I was riveted by your story when that book came out. And so to hear that there's a follow-up, I think, is even more fascinating. Can you tell us what inspired you to write this sequel, The Map of Heaven?
Well, I think it's important to point out a near-death experience will absolutely change your life completely. I had to go back to square one to even begin to understand where I needed to go in a comprehension more about the rules of brain, mind, consciousness, causality, free will, the very nature of existence. Being a pretty conventional neuroscientist, I had never read any of the literature on near-death experiences before my coma, did not read anything about the science of non-local consciousness, that is, things like telepathy and out-of-body experiences, remote viewing, past life memories in children, reincarnation, all of that, near-death literature, the after-death communications. I'd paid no attention to it before, but of course this really lit my fire. And I was, after I wrote down everything I could remember about my own journey, that's when I delved deeply into that literature, shocked to find the similarities, and especially about the science behind non-local consciousness, about all those phenomena I just mentioned. And there's science attempting to learn more about near-death experiences and after-death communications, all of that. The whole world is waking up to this. The scientific community is absolutely coming around to it. Now, it turns out the problem is that pure scientific materialism, you know, that version of science that I worshipped before my coma, and I don't use that term lightly, because that pure materialism that says that consciousness is an illusion, that none of us have free will, that's what our conventional neuroscience teaches, that we're all just, you know, our consciousness is the whirling of subatomic particles, atoms, molecules, cells in the brain, and that's it, nothing more. Well, in fact, what my coma journey showed me very clearly is that our that conventional scientific thinking is absolutely clueless. It cannot even offer up one sentence about what it tells you should be accepted without evidence. And that is its stipulation that the brain creates consciousness. That is false. And in fact, anyone who is far along this pathway of studying brain, mind, and consciousness has abandoned that kindergarten-level simplistic thinking and left it behind because it does not work.
Ben, is it the other way around? Does consciousness animate the brain?
Yes, that in fact soul, consciousness, soul and spirit is what truly exists and what runs this whole show. Now, what is it that materialist science brings to the table? It actually brings a beautiful gift in the form of our modern versions of trying to get to the bottom of string theory and of quantum gravity and uniting relativity and quantum mechanics into one field, that basically we are forced into realizing that consciousness is fundamental in the universe. That's what quantum mechanics tried to tell us 100 years ago. And our physics community, by and large, has been a little slow on the uptake, although I get into this in Map of Heaven and credit Roger Penrose and Brian Josephson, Emmett Goswami, and other physicists who are getting into this, Henry Stapp. I mean, there's some that are very brilliant physicists who have always recognized we needed a much more robust understanding of consciousness itself if we're even going to pretend that we have any kind of model of a theory of reality. So consciousness is really at the center of this all. And given that the only thing any one of us truly knows exists is our own consciousness, you know, the conventional scientific effort to say, well, none of us are conscious, that's an illusion, is so patently false and misleading to the general public. And that is part of what Proof of Heaven and Map of Heaven is all about, is exposing that great white elephant in the room,
right,
that deep degree of consciousness itself, and saying, look, people, we can get to a deeper understanding, but not in that kindergarten-level thinking of simplistic pure materialism. That is a dead end. And all of the neuroscientists, even those who eschew any kind of spirituality or magical, you know, mystery aspect of consciousness, have gotten to a point where they've had to abandon that very simple view of brain creates consciousness. We're clearly now into a much deeper discussion about where this is all headed.
And as you get into the metaphysical and spiritual aspects of this, and you talk in this book about how throughout recorded history, people having near-death experiences, they tend to tell remarkably similar stories. When you talk about this and when you are interviewed, or even when skeptics come up to you, in particular, when people who are skeptical come up to you and they don't buy it, what do you think is the reason for why people are reluctant to accept these ideas?
I think that each and every soul is on this journey. All of humanity is on this journey. We each reflect kind of the whole. It's kind of like a hologram. We're each wrestling and struggling, trying to get closer to truth. And so, in fact, I will tell you that I had a lot of help from true open-minded skeptics, even in the formulation of the book Proof of Heaven, because I was my own worst skeptic to start with. I was the guy whose brain was wrecked by all this, who had to wait while his previous knowledge of brain, mind, and consciousness came back over a few months, while he struggled to write down everything about his own journey, and believed my doctors. You know, as they told me, the dying brain does all kinds of tricks. I was a skeptic, as was my older son, Evan IV, majoring in neuroscience in college. He was very helpful in this whole process, as have been other friends and colleagues who were open-minded skeptics. That is valuable. The thing that really has no value are the debunkers and deniers who simply come in here, especially those who are addicted to their simplistic model of reductive materialism and brain creates consciousness, who simply deny it, say, well, Alexander made it all up. You know, it had to be a dream or hallucination. They haven't even read the book. I go into all this in some detail. If you read the appendix, I have the 9 hypotheses that I considered with very helpful, skeptical, open-minded, critical neuroscientists trying to understand how this could have happened in my brain. What we came to realize was it was too real to be real because it did not happen in the brain. It did not happen in the physical universe. And that's part of this deeper understanding. And a lot of scientists get this. The simple-minded skeptics who are addicted to pure materialism, like I was before my coma. I mean, before my coma, I might have heard this story and not paid enough attention to it to look into the details. But when you get into the details, this is the reason I asked to get us to give talks to scientific groups, to doctors, nursing schools, surgical groups, etc., because the scientific side realizes the validity of this and where it's all headed.
Well, it's fascinating to speak with you, and I so thank you for sharing this with us. It's a topic millions are interested in. So, Dr. Eben Alexander, thank you.
Well, thank you for having me. Those who want to learn more can go to ebenalexander.com. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And we're back in a moment with a preview of Ripley, Believe It or Not, airing tonight on WJCT Television. That's next.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, Image versus Reality, why some say public misperceptions about the U.S. military lead to careless spending, strategic errors, and wars we cannot win. Weekdays at 10, right after First Coast Connect on 89.9 FM WJCT.
Hi, I'm Ray Hollister.
I'm Tom Braun.
And we're the guys from Deemable Tech.
Hey, if you've got a question about your computer, mobile phone, tablet, or the internet...
And who doesn't?
We're here to help.
Join us Thursdays during Morning Edition and All Things Considered here on WJCT.
And check out our podcast online at deemable.com.
That's deemable.com.
Discover the latest and greatest in independent music tonight at 11 on The Indie Endeavor.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour tonight on WJCT Television, you won't want to miss American Experience, Ripley, Believe It or Not. It's a fascinating program telling the story of Robert Ripley and his obsession with the odd and keen eye for the curious. It made him one of the most successful men in the country during the Great Depression. Over 3 decades, his Believe It or Not franchise grew into an entertainment empire, expanding from newspapers to radio, film, and television. And of course, we've got a local connection with St. Augustine's Ripley's Believe It or Not Museum. Edward Meyer is vice president of exhibits and archives for Ripley's. He is the ultimate Ripley historian and raconteur, and he's on the line now with a preview of tonight's show. Edward, good morning.
Good morning, and thank you for having us on. And sounds like you're about as excited as I am about this show.
Oh, it's going to be great. Again, this is airing tonight on WJCT. Now, you are the ultimate Ripley historian. You've traveled the world collecting stories and artifacts to fill all of the museums and books. What drew you to this subject matter?
Well, I was going to say, I can't draw a thing. But in every other way, I'm sort of the modern Robert Ripley. You know, I've been with the company now 37 years, and It's my job to buy the exhibits that are shown in our auditoriums, and you mentioned closest one, St. Augustine, which is actually our oldest continuous, opened in 1950, so we've been good friends with St. Augustine for a long time. I was hired right out of college as a librarian to catalog the famous newspaper cartoon. Robert Ripley was a newspaper illustrator. Started in San Francisco drawing sports stories, but eventually started drawing what he titled, believe it or not, stories about anything, basically. Every subject was, you know, food for thought, but, you know, with a twist that it seemed unbelievable, seemed like it couldn't be true, but Ripley would prove everything he produced was true, despite the world calling him the biggest liar in the world.
When people watch the show tonight, what will tell us a little bit about what they'll learn?
Well, it is a full one-hour documentary on Robert Ripley. They won't learn about the company today, but they'll see how our company came about and what we're founded on. And Ripley was a sports illustrator, born in Santa Rosa, California, started his career in San Francisco, spent most of his career in New York City, drew every day in newspapers, and in 1922 took his first trip around the world, a circumnavigation, and was introduced to foreign cultures, foreign architecture, food, language, religion, and interjected what he was finding on his trips into a daily diary-type journal that caught on very, very quickly. And people were just fascinated because they'd never been around the world. They didn't know what India or China looked like. And Ripley was telling them in an amusing fashion with his skill at drawing. And it caught on very fast during the 20s. He puts the best of those daily cartoons into a book in 1929, and the book was an overnight success that led to him being hired by William Randolph Hearst, who was the media mogul who literally controlled both the newspaper publication, the magazines, and radio. And he put his money behind Ripley, allowing Ripley to travel all over the world, not just to find interesting stories, but to start bringing artifacts back that became the basis of our collection today, and the six auditoriums that Ripley opened during his own lifetime, starting in Chicago.
And the New York Times review of this program is fascinating in the way it notes that Ripley really was ahead of his time. He was ahead of the curve of anticipating, as they call it, the endless human capacity for gawking. It was social media of a sort long before the term existed. Do you agree with that?
I do, 100%. I'm quite sure they're probably quoting me. I really think that Ripley was all about social media long before anybody ever used that term. Part of his magic was his reaching out to the public to get their stories. Now, part of this is, you know, being an international playboy and being a bit lazy, that he didn't want to do the work, and people were willing to, you know, tell him, believe it or not, for their 15 minutes of fame. And he capitalized on that tremendously. And that, you know, steamrolled itself. The more he wrote stories about common man, you know, could be your neighbor, could be your wife, whatever, the more people wanted their opportunity to get into the Ripley's Believe It or Not cartoon.
Well, we have a DVD.
At one point, he's getting over 2 million pieces of mail a year.
Pretty incredible.
Absolutely.
And we have a DVD of tonight's program, Ripley, Believe It or Not. It's going to air tonight on WJCT television as part of PBS's American Experience series. We have a giveaway, actually, which is pretty exciting. We will pick a winner at random. If you're interested in this DVD copy of Ripley, Believe It or Not, just email us right now at firstcoastconnect.com. at WJCT.org, and we'll get that DVD out to you. Again, the program airs...
Literally be the first on the block to have it.
Exactly.
I haven't even got a copy.
Oh, wow. Well, that's saying something. Well, Edward Meyer, Vice President of Exhibits and Archives for Ripley's, fascinating to talk to you. Pleasure. Thanks so much for being with us this morning. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having us on. Enjoy the show.
Again, that's tonight at 9 on WJCT Television. And that's our program. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. This show's producer is Sean Birch. The show's theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Chevchik. And again, to get in touch with the program, it's simple. Just send us an email to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Next on Diane Rehm, debate over claims that a disconnect between the U.S. military and the public at large has led to careless spending, strategic errors, and unwinnable wars. That conversation is next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.